Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, November 25th, 2014. A Catholic Church priest in Wau says the church has a key role to play in helping to end the conflict in South Sudan.
People in the town are arrested and accused of supporting Dr. Riek Machar, and those of Riek are saying these people are loyal to Salva Kiir. So where do we go? Our problem facing our politicians in South Sudan is they are not mature in politics.
And outraged Kenyan citizens demand more police security days after a bus attack in northern Kenya.
If he's not able to fire Ole Lenku or fire Kimayo, you can request him to resign. He can be able to do that. I think the president is too lazy because he's safe.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Security Council today voted to renew the mandate of the UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, for 6 months. The move drew praise today from South Sudan's ambassador to the United Nations, Francis Mading Deng. Deng welcomed the renewal of the UNMISS mandate and expressed South Sudan's appreciation to countries that are contributing police and troops who serve in the peacekeeping force in South Sudan. But in a statement, Deng also urged the international community not to impose sanctions on South Sudan. He says sanctions are, quote, now being talked about, but insists they would not help to restore peace in South Sudan. Deng said sanctions have historically been shown to harden the positions of warring sides and make them more confrontational instead of pushing them towards cooperation. Deng called on the international community to instead play a positive role in South Sudan's slow-moving peace process by helping both parties to reach an agreement. He cited as a good model the international community's involvement in the peace process that resulted in the Comprehensive Peace Agreement of 2005, which ended the long civil war in Sudan and eventually led to independence for South Sudan.
A prominent South Sudanese church leader says the Catholic Church has a prophetic role to play in any society, including South Sudan. Roko Taban Musa, the apostolic administrator for Malakal Diocese, addressed the congregation in Wau during Sunday's Mass. Monsignor Taban says more must be done to resolve the 11-month-old conflict and allow South Sudanese to live in peace. He says the church, through its ministry, has influenced political change in the past and can do it now in South Sudan. Taban says the church cannot step aside and watch its believers have been misled by politicians.
The prophets were addressing governors and kings so that they could rule the people through justice and equality. I think this is the role of any priest. Many times, when we speak and preach to the people, some politicians say we are interfering in politics. Therefore, we, in the church, we will still stick to our prophecy role toward the society.
Taban says government has been arresting and detaining people and accusing them of supporting the rebels. He says such accusations open the way for security organizations to arrest more people, which make people live in fear.
People in the town are arrested and accused of supporting Dr. Riek Machar, and those of Riek are saying these people are loyal to Salva Kiir. So where do we go? Our problem facing our politicians in South Sudan is...
UNMISS, along with one staff member working for the Catholic Church in Wau. All of three of them are still being held in detention without charge. Derek Uya Alfred, the State Minister of Information, says the government grants freedom of expression, but it should not interfere with the security of the country.
Nobody is being silenced because he's speaking. People are speaking very freely, providing that they should be talking about something which is reasonable, not using that freedom of expression to try to jeopardize the welfare of the country or the security of the country and so on.
The minister says the rebels represent the wrong elements in society.
I cannot allow my citizens to be acknowledging themselves with this kind of person or this group of people. Those are wrong elements.
Taban says the government and the church should work hand in hand to provide stability to the people of South Sudan. He was assigned to be the apostolic administrator of the Catholic Church of Malakal in 2006, but fled to Juba during the recent crisis. He was speaking to the congregation in Wau during the ordination of four new Catholic priests. This report was prepared by VOA fellow Michael Atit in Washington.
Kenyan activists took to the streets today demanding the government fire the police chief and interior cabinet secretary for failing to protect the population. The protest comes a few days after Somali militant group Al-Shabaab attacked a bus in northeast Kenya, killing 28 people. As Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi, the protesters say they are tired of mourning the innocent.
Demonstrators camped outside the president's office for the better part of the day and paraded hundreds of crosses painted in red, symbolizing those killed in terror attacks and crime activities around the country. Kenyan activist Boniface Mwangi was one of the organizers of the protest. He says the president must fire Interior Cabinet Secretary Joseph Olelenku and Police Chief David Kimayo for failing to protect citizens against militants and criminal gangs.
I want the president to call for a public inquiry about all the past terror attacks and where the security failed. If he's not able to fire Olelenku or fire Kimayo, you can request them to resign. He can be able to do that. I think the president is too lazy because he's safe. Our president has an armored car. He has bodyguards. Our members of parliament have bodyguards. Our senators have bodyguards. We have nothing.
Kenya has witnessed a series of deadly attacks over the last 3 years, ever since it sent troops into Somalia to fight Al-Shabaab. The deadliest was the assault on a Nairobi shopping mall in September 2013 that left more than 70 people dead. Wanjiru Nderu, a mother of three, says she is tired of the government not backing up its tough words with action, and she warns that insecurity may catch up with Kenya's political class if things do not improve.
We are hoping to send a message as Kenyans that we are tired and something needs to be done. Perhaps in their high places, they do not see the need to change, or they do not see the need to look at us in a better way or to value the Kenyan life. But we are here to pass them a message that we are tired. We are totally, totally tired.
Another protester, gospel musician David Madenga, says terror attacks and insecurity are hurting people's livelihoods.
I'm here on the streets as a Kenyan to demand decisive action on the security agenda. A lot of blood has been shed, and it's so scary if policemen can be attacked, and that's a policeman with a gun. So where am I? I mean, business can't even go on in Kenya. We can't even raise families. Nothing can happen without security. Security is our right. That's why we're demanding for it.
On Sunday, Kenyan officials said the army had killed Saturday's bus attackers along with dozens of other fighters. Critics demanded proof of the statement amid questions over how serious the government is about tackling insecurity. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Kenya, we move to Cameroon, where officials say Boko Haram attacks have led to closure of at least 130 schools near its northern border with Nigeria. Most students have left the area for safer places in the country's interior. Moki Edwin Kinzeka in Yaoundé has more for VOA News.
Cameroon education officials say violent raids and kidnappings by the Nigerian militant Islamist group Boko Haram are taking their toll. Monuna Fotso with the Ministry of Secondary Education says regular cross-border attacks have virtually halted academic activity along Cameroon's 500-kilometer boundary with Nigeria's Borno State, stronghold of the militant group Boko Haram, whose name means Western education is sin, targets schools in particular.
The diagnosis is going on. If there are some which are destroyed or occupied, because some of the school were temporarily occupied. But I am telling you, we are preoccupied, very preoccupied by this situation. It's the whole government. It's not only the Minister of Secondary Education.
Monuna Fotso says due to the insecurity, authorities have advised students and teachers to relocate.
If there are some localities where the situation is so bad at the level of the government, we should move or delocalize some schools. At that moment also, we'll bring the staff and the student to the new sites. The objective of this Boko Haram is to traumatize our citizens.
The border areas which have been hardest hit are Amchide, Fotokol, Kolofata and Kiti Matari. Ashigashia reported 30% of their schools had to close 2 months ago when Boko Haram occupied the town for 3 weeks before being dislodged by the Cameroon military. Despite dispatching troops and cooperating with the Nigerian government, Cameroon has increasingly become both a staging ground and a casualty of Boko Haram's 5-year violence campaign to create a caliphate in northern Nigeria. The country is also struggling with hundreds of thousands of refugees from Nigeria and its other destabilized neighbor, the Central African Republic. Minister of Territorial Administration and Decentralization, René Emmanuel Sadi, told Cameroon's National Assembly that the Boko Haram threat is choking life in the country.
Nous subissons les effets collatéraux.
He says Cameroon is suffering the collateral effects of a conflict that does not directly concern it, and that everyday Cameroonians living along the border with Nigeria are subjected to Boko Haram atrocities. These include assault, rape, and murder. Moki Edwin Kintzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the Ebola crisis.
Ebola is actually a difficult disease to catch. It's not transmitted through the air like the flu. You cannot get it from just riding on a plane or a bus. The only way that a person can contract the disease is by coming into direct contact with the bodily fluids of somebody who is already showing symptoms. We know how to fight this disease. We know the protocols. And we know that when they're followed, they work. And if we take the steps that are necessary, if we're guided by the science, the facts, not fear, we're absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak here in the United States, and we can continue to lead the world in this urgent effort.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new strain of bird flu surfaces in Europe and African countries are put on alert. That story is coming up after this break.
South Sudan in Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We're also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your community treat people with disabilities?
Well, the community that I'm in, they treat people quite well, actually. I quite remember sometime there was a certain man that was suffering from elephantiasis, and there was one lady there with a provision store. Whenever he passed by, she actually provided for his food.
I think people with disabilities in my community, they are treated unfair as they are denied job opportunities.
Yeah, so some they do care about people with disabilities by helping them, but some don't care. It depends on the character of the person. Eh? Some people are just bad, you know, very bad. But to myself, I say I do care. I do feel sorry for people who have disabilities.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about bird flu. A new strain of bird flu known as H5N8 has been detected in Europe. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says it poses a serious threat to poultry there. African countries have been put on alert for possible cases. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The FAO's Ian Douglas says researchers have been monitoring the spread of H5N8.
We have been following this particular strain for quite some time. It's been detected in Asia, in China, Japan, South Korea. It's caused disease in poultry in those countries and has been detected in wild birds there. It's related to the influenza strain that spread across the world in the mid-2000s, but it is a different virus.
Douglas is head of the FAO's Crisis Management Center for Animal Health. He says in Asia, the new bird flu strain led to the slaughter of poultry on farms where it was discovered, along with quarantines and some temporary restrictions on trade.
There's much more work that's done in the lead up to that, and in part this is involving better detection, better surveillance, and good laboratory diagnostic techniques.
H5N8 was also found in migratory birds and waterfowl in Asia. It's now in at least 3 European countries.
It's been reported in the last 2 or 3 weeks from Germany, the Netherlands and the UK. And each of those countries, as it's affected a poultry production unit, has responded with their well-planned executed response techniques. And certainly they're increasing their level of awareness and surveillance. In addition, we've heard that some wild bird surveillance has resulted in this virus being detected.
This strain of avian flu is said to pose a threat, especially in countries along the Black Sea with limited resources, and along East Atlantic migratory routes of wild birds. Douglas says the spread of H5N8 appears similar to what was seen in the mid-2000s with the H5N1 strain. So countries outside of Europe are on alert.
Certainly in those instances it did spread to some of the countries, for instance in West Africa. The H5N1, with a great deal of work from all of the countries and agencies involved, has been limited now to many fewer countries than occurred initially, and we've not seen a reoccurrence of H5N1 in West Africa, for instance, since the initial spread some 6 years ago. But there's every reason to be concerned that we could see a repeat of that pattern with this different strain.
Avian flu viruses spread very quickly, and there's usually a very high mortality rate among poultry. Some fowl, like ducks, may carry the virus but show no symptoms. However, they can spread the disease. Asked if H5N8 poses any threat to humans, the FAO official says,
there is no evidence, with the limited experience of this virus, that any humans have been infected. It's believed that the nature of the virus is not well adapted to invade human cells. However, we're conscious that other influenza viruses have made that cross and in some cases causing severe illness in humans. We very much take the advice of WHO on this point for the moment. Their statements are that they don't see a human impact.
The Food and Agriculture Organization is working with the World Organization for Animal Health in tracking the new strain of avian flu. They urge countries and poultry farmers to increase what's called biosecurity. That's the protection of agricultural animals from infectious agents. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Lawyers in Egypt are appealing to a higher court after 2 men accused of causing the death of a 13-year-old girl during an illegal circumcision were acquitted last week. Activists say this is Egypt's first attempt ever at prosecuting people for female genital mutilation, known as FGM. Heather Murdock has more for VOA from Beirut.
For years, rights groups in Egypt have been railing against FGM, saying it devastates girls' bodies and minds. In a 2008 victory for those activists, the practice was banned. But late last year, more than 5 years after the ban, UNICEF said 91% of women in Egypt between the ages of 15 and 49 have been circumcised.
It violates the human rights of women and girls. I mean, why anybody should interfere in my body to cut a part of it?
That was Saad Abudaya, a Middle East and North Africa consultant for Equality Now, a rights group advocating against FGM. She says she was hopeful that the doctor and the father of Soher Albatia, a 13-year-old girl who prosecutors and medical experts say died from complications related to FGM, would be convicted, deterring other doctors from performing the banned surgery. The doctor, Roslyn Fadl, could have been sentenced to up to 2 years in prison if convicted, says Abu Daya.
We were really very shocked and disappointed from his position, from his verdict.
But she says prosecutors are not giving up and have already filed an appeal with a higher court. The original court did not immediately provide an explanation for the acquittals, but some charges had already been dropped after Albatia's family made a deal with Dr. Fadl. Despite the dangers associated with female genital mutilation, it is widespread in 29 countries, mostly in Africa. Families that support the practice say it can protect a girl's chastity.
They think that by this, women will have less excitement for sex, limiting their sexual lives, especially before marriage. This is what they think about it.
Uncircumcised girls in regions where FGM is common face social rejection, and many people, both Muslim and Christian, believe it is a religious duty. Some analysts say prosecuting doctors could drive the practice underground and more commonly into the hands of untrained cutters who perform the surgery in dangerous, unsanitary conditions. But Abu Daya says since it is often respected doctors performing FGM these days in Egypt, it is often hard to convince people that there is anything wrong with the tradition. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Beirut.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Nabil. Police in the Midwestern U.S. town of Ferguson, Missouri, used tear gas to disperse angry protesters late last night after a grand jury ruled it will not indict a white police officer who killed an unarmed black teenager in August. Violent protests and looting broke out immediately after the jury announced charges would not be filed against Darren Wilson, who shot 18-year-old Michael Brown multiple times during an altercation on August 9th. Several downtown stores were looted and at least one police car was set on fire. Human rights organizations have filed a complaint on behalf of 80 survivors of rape and sexual violence during the occupation of northern Mali. More than 2,000 women and girls were subject to rape or forced marriages in 2012 and 2013 when Islamist extremists and separatist rebels took control of Gao and Timbuktu. This is the first independent attempt to bring justice for the victims. When Gao and Timbuktu first came under occupation in January of 2012, hundreds of women and young girls were raped, often by several offenders. And finally, Pope Francis received standing ovations during speeches before the European Parliament and the Council of Europe today in Strasbourg, France. In both places, he called on a weary Europe to, quote, wake up, end quote, and re-embrace its principles of human rights and democracy. It is the first papal address in more than 25 years to the European institutions. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
The World Health Organization is warning that an outbreak of plague in Madagascar could spread rapidly throughout the country. Madagascar's health ministry reported today that the disease has killed 47 people and said the number of suspected cases is up to 138. Lisa Schrein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Reports of an outbreak of plague in Madagascar conjure up chilling images of the Black Death, which killed 25 million people in medieval country, is far from this apocalyptic scenario. But the World Health Organization says it is concerned that this fatal disease could infect many people, and it is working with authorities and partner agencies in Madagascar to contain the outbreak. The plague is not new to Madagascar. It recurs annually. However, WHO spokesman Christian Lindmeier says the UN Health Agency is particularly concerned about this outbreak because the number of cases of plague appears to be higher than in recent years.
Cases have been reported in 16 districts of 7 regions.
in Antananarivo, the capital and largest city in Madagascar. Also, two recorded cases have been identified, including one death. There is now a risk of rapid spread of the disease due to the city's high population density and the weakness of the healthcare system. The situation is further complicated by the high level of resistance to deltamethrin, which is an insecticide used to control fleas that has been observed in the country.
The first case of the plague was identified on August 31st. The patient died 3 days later. However, the authorities of Madagascar did not notify WHO of the outbreak until November 4th. Lindmeyer says measures for the control and prevention of plague are being implemented in the affected districts. He says personal protective equipment, insecticides, spray materials, and antibiotics are being made available in those areas. He says a WHO expert has gone to Madagascar to work with the authorities to fully investigate the situation and to see what more needs to be done to bring the disease under control.
Plague can be a very severe disease in people with a case fatality ratio of 30 to 60% if left untreated, so 30 to 60. Plague is caused by the bacteria Yersinia pestis, a zoonotic bacteria usually found in small animals and their fleas. People infected with plague usually develop flu-like symptoms after an incubation period of 3 to 7 days.
Humans bitten by an infected flea usually develop a bubonic form of plague, which causes the swelling of the lymph node. If the bacteria reach the lungs, the patient develops pneumonia. This can be transmitted from person to person through infected droplets spread by coughing. Bubonic plague can be successfully treated with antibiotics if caught early. On the other hand, WHO says pneumonic plague is one of the most deadly infectious diseases. It can kill patients within 24 hours after infection. So far, WHO says only 2% of reported cases are of the pneumonic form. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that report by Lisa Schlein brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Dodo by Lokoya Group from Eastern Equatoria State.
Kaila kaila bene ya ekele mena madara na dikaga.
We have been listening to a Lokoya group from Eastern Equatoria State with the song Dodo. I am John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Thank you for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Mother and I